5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Since Bobby Yeagan, Curtis Dennis, know that we can love you way back from the beginning. Trusted source for the news. 7 Knife and Hallis, what it is, what it do. Since Bobby Yeagan, Curtis Dennis, know that we've been loyal even when we wasn't winning. A trusted source for the news. 7 Knife and Hallis in your ears, you.
Awesome. Bobby, the Bears.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another edition of 79th House. This is episode 292. We are 8 episodes away from the big 300. Here is your guy, Scott Flows, man. You know, follow us on all social media platforms at Barbecue Scott, at Flows Andolini. All of the links are in the description box. You know, my personal YouTube's in the description box, Patreon. And if you're watching this on Wednesday, January 28th, that means you are a Patreon subscriber. Now, we'll be doing periodical. I don't know if that's the right words. I probably used the wrong word.
Periodic.
Podcast during the off season. Won't be a weekly thing, but we're going to try to at least get maybe a pod or two a month, I'm guessing, outside of the actual Bears news. Like if there's breaking news, I'll do a quick video and things like that. But today we're going to, you know, go over some off season needs for the Bears. We're going to talk about, you know, what was the best we saw from, you know, from the season, what was the worst we saw from the season, talk about potential coaches leaving, and just like the importance of putting together a good coach staff. And then at the end, we're going to give our award predictions that really have nothing to do with the Bears, because outside maybe one award, I don't think the Bears are going to win any award. I don't even think they nominated outside of Coach of the Year for Ben. So we'll talk about that as well. If you want to get these off-season pods right away, please subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/BarbersChatNetwork. Link is in the description box, or you can scan the QR code right here on the screen. The Patreon subscribers will get it the first week it comes out. It'll be on the free feed a week later. For those of you who don't subscribe, you can subscribe to the $5 79th and Hallis tier. We just get 79th and Hallis content, or you can subscribe to the $10 Barbershop access tier, which is everything 79th and Hallis, and pretty much everything I do with I'm Not Gonna Hold You. I throw a lot of Patreon exclusive content on there as well, man. So anyway, we are a week removed, we're about 9 days removed from the end of the season. Joe, you texted me this weekend and you was like, man, I feel like we could have beat some of the AFC teams at least. So the first topic I want to say is, what will it take for the Bears to make the NFC title game? Now, granted, they were 15 yards away from being in Cairo's field goal range to actually have a shot to go to the NFC championship game. Did anything about this weekend that you watched change your opinion on how far or how close the Bears could be to making one?
Honestly, it's both. It changed both of my opinions. I think at one point during the Bears versus Rams game, I was drinking a bit of the Kool-Aid. I'm like, okay, the Bears can probably win the Super Bowl if they get past the Rams today. Because, I mean, at the end of the first half, it was 10-10. I'm like, man, Bears got them right where they want to. You know what I mean? They've held. And in the third quarter, neither team scored. I'm like, so if they can do this to the best offense in the league, there's no way they can't stop any other team. But it sort of changed after the AFC, I mean, after the NFC championship games. The AFC title game, I was like, man, they could have beat any of these teams, literally any of these teams. Nothing that I saw from either quarterback in the AFC titles game. Obviously, one was Jarrett Stidham, but But nothing that I saw from those offenses or from those play callers or from those quarterbacks made me believe the Bears couldn't keep up with them or beat them. Like, as good as Drake May is, he's an MVP front runner, and he'll probably have a shot at getting the MVP. He has been so-so during the playoffs. Of course, I know the nuances is that it was snow, but he has been so-so. I mean, if you look at his stats against the Texans, for someone who was consistently over 65, 68% passing in the playoffs, he has not netted 60. Wow. You know, for other quarterbacks like Caleb Williams, you're like, well, you're used to that happen. For Drake, you're not used to that happen.
The playoffs are weird because Caleb ain't turnover prone and he threw a lot of interceptions in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why I won't pin hit on him like specifically, okay, this is just like this the worst thing ever. But I will say it has been interesting to see how he has changed in the playoffs versus the regular season. The regular season, it seemed like Drake May wouldn't turn the ball over at all. It seemed like he was just prone to, you know, getting that high completion percentage and constantly being that. What we've seen in this playoff this year is that that ball can come out. You know what I mean? Whether it's a fumble or whether it's a interception, it can come out. And I mean, against Houston, he fumbled four times, lost two of them. Against the Chargers, he fumbled twice, lost one. So, I mean, he's sitting up there with a lot of turnovers. He threw three touchdowns against Houston, but he also had three turnovers. And against Denver, wasn't really much effective offensively. That being said, I do think the Bears could have won against either of those teams. But, of course, they would have to get to the Super Bowl for that to happen. Fast forward to the Seahawks and Rams game, and I am utterly convinced the Seahawks would have smoked the Bears. Now, of course, there is nuance within it. Teams match up differently. Schemes change when you play certain teams. But seeing the Seahawks not only be able to do good on defense, of course, this was more of a high-scoring game, but be able to do good on defense, to be able to shut down certain passing lanes, to be able to hold their own even when the situation gets tense, then you also got Sam Darnold playing out of his mind utterly. It was like, yeah, I don't think the Bears would have won that. And I think the biggest thing it makes me think or make me believe that could really change the Bears' fortune, shockingly, is not going to be defense, because defense is the obvious pick. We obviously know a good defense changes the situation for the Bears, and they score enough that if you have a good defense, they put themselves as a contender immediately. I think what will really change the Bears is consistent offense. What I mean consistent offense is Ben Johnson has a formula where we're going to make sure we stick to the run on obvious downs, but also not get so predictable that you can't have any sort of adjustment or any sort of out of the blue plays by the offense. So that's the first thing, making sure that we're doing the smart play when it accounts for it. In addition to that, making sure that you allow Caleb Williams to do what Caleb Williams does. I think we saw a little bit of that with the Rams game. That being said, he did throw more interceptions than he's ever had in the game when that happened. But the only way he gets better is if he keeps doing it. So allowing Caleb to be Caleb, allowing yourself to play smart when it counts, and then also not dramatically shifting your game plan every single game. It seems like Ben Johnson has approached each game with, we're going to adapt everything 110% to the team that we're playing. I don't think that's a good call. One, because football, while it's a difficult game, it is not rocket science. It's not like I'm giving you a philosophy to do and learn in a day and then become a master at it. I'm asking you to move a football forward, whether you're handing it off or throwing it. And part of that is, what do you do best? The Bears do best when they lead with the running game, when they get into play action, when they allow Caleb Williams to cut loose. And your preparation and your agenda for each game needs to be some iteration of that. If you shy away too much, like if one game becomes completely run dominant and hypothetical, Caleb Williams throws 14 passes, you're like, this is not who you are. But also, if you become too pass happy, and I'm not talking about where a situation where you have to pass because you're down, but when you come out the gate and you've had three series and you've run twice, I'm like, that's not really your game either. And so if Ben Johnson will settle down, stick to what he knows best. I mean, for me, it's like when I've watched the Chiefs over these years. Man, the Chiefs keep it simple, man. Andy Reid keeps it simple. He is going to allow Pat to be Pat, and if Pat makes a mistake, he's going to come right back to let Pat do Pat.
And Pat Andy Reid has his favorites. KYP, as Tom Waddle always says, know your personnel. I don't think Ben, I think he's starting to know, but you're right. Once he solidifies who are my guys, the game plan, I believe, will be a little more consistent.
Absolutely. And so simplifying your offense, because right now it seems like he has so much at his disposal, he thinks he has to use everything at his disposal. No. You need to simplify what you're doing. And I don't know if that's because he's learning as a play caller or learning as a head coach, or he just thinks this is what works for the Bears, because obviously, you know, the Lions were and are an in-division opponent. And so I've seen a lot of Lions games. And at least it seemed like when the Lions played in division, the game plan was simple. We're going to, not this year, but last year, obviously, when he was there. We're going to give that rock to Demo, who's going to get some tough yards, which is then opening it up for Jahmyr Gibbs to get some out in space. And then when you get so set on that, we're going to allow Jared Goff to find someone like Amon-Ra. We're going to find someone like J-Mo. And if it's like third and eight and we need those yards, then we're going to find freaking Laporta or Amon-Ra for those tough yards. And it seems simplified. And their fortunes changed for them when they primarily relied on the speed and the speed only this year. And I'm like, yeah, while the offense was still, I think, top 10, I may be wrong, it still took a step back. And so now someone like Ben Johnson, who's going in his first full offseason as coach. Obviously, he had time in offseason last year. He was a part of the drafting process. But this year, you're coming into it from the end of January to the draft to training camp, mandatory minicamp, rookie minicamp as the head coach, meaning you will have a full offseason for you to judge and see what do we do good, what did we do wrong, how can we take what we had good and make into something concrete that is consistent and puts the Bears in a winning position. So it's going to be consistent offense first, then the defense, because if the Bears had a consistent offense, they would have been in the NFC Championship game this past weekend. I don't know if they would have won, but, man, they would have been close to even – they'd have been – I would say they'd have been close, but, man, they would have had a big shot. So get that consistent offense done, right, because you can't fix an offense overnight. You can't. I think it takes a year or more. Now, we did see you could fix an offensive line overnight, but even when they replaced the interior, they still had Darnell Wright who was there, who was good. So it takes a year or more. So this year you could start to really get some great guys, to get some, you know, some quality interior rushers, some edge rushers. Maybe you're considering replacing a DB or a linebacker or two, but I don't expect the defense to be great immediately. You know, they will be going from like 27th to 15th. That's great. That's a nice jump. You're not the cream of the crop. You're middle of the road, but you're manageable. What I do expect is the offense that was top 10 to start being solidified top five in every category. Now, if they already were top five, I apologize. But far as I know, the Bears were top five total offense, but not top five passing. I can be mistaken, but I do have up the Bears stats right now. And so when we look at the regular season, total yards, the Bears were top 10. In rushing, the Bears were number three. In passing, the Bears were, 10. So you got three in running. Now it's time to get five or better in passing. You do that, I think you really become just a great offense that makes you, that puts you up there with the contenders.
Yeah, from this week, I have kind of the same feeling, disagree just a tad. I looked at the AFC Championship game, like if we made the Super Bowl, we'd have won. And I told you that before the game on and I guess LA. I said if we can win these next two, I think we won the Super Bowl. In fact, I think the NFC Championship game was a Super Bowl. I'm just gonna put this out. I do not think the Patriots beat the Seahawks. I do not think it's gonna be I think it'll be a close game. Obviously, I'll give my official score prediction next week, but I think the NFC Championship game was the Super Bowl. And just side note, too, I don't really think the Super Bowl has that much of a vibe. I'm not going to be like, oh, nobody's going to watch no Super Bowl. People going to watch two big fan bases, Patriots, Seahawks, big fan bases. But I kind of don't care who wins. I don't know if it's because the Bears were in it and they got eliminated, or I just don't care about the story. Like, I know people will gas up Drake May if he wins, but I got out, so that don't really matter to me. And I think Sam Darnold will be a good story, too. But on the Bears front, I watched the AFC Championship game, like, man, we could have beat either one of those teams. Well, I do believe that we would have lost to Seattle. I kind of feel like we'd have gave them a shot. And I think I just wanted that opportunity more than anything to see if they could. If they got their ass whooped, fair play, whatever. But I think I was just I feel like I was more irritated than I thought I would be watching Championship Sunday. Now, granted, I think a lot of it had to do with me watching Arsenal lose to Manchester United earlier today. And I think that was the key factor in my irritation for the last 48 hours. But on top of that, I was just like, man, I just wanted to at least see how we stacked up against Seattle. But I also looked at it where, like, I also don't think we're that far because I'm looking at the landscape of the NFC. And this is what I mean by that. I think Sam Darnold's a really solid quarterback. He ain't a juggernaut. The Seattle team ain't no juggernaut. You know, they're still in a very tough division that San Francisco could win next year, the Rams could win next year. We don't know if Matthew Stafford's going to be back next year. He could take his MVP and he could go retire. I don't know. Maybe he comes back for 1 year. It took a lot for him to play this year. A lot of people thought he was going to retire this year. Like, that back was hurting all year. And for him to have the year he had, not that I never respected Matt Stafford, because I did. I wasn't really never that much of a fan because he played for Detroit. But I think this year I gained the most respect for him because of just how great he played with that back injury that we know he was dealing with all year. And so
I got a hater take.
Let me just finish this. And then, yeah. So I would say he's probably going to retire. My opinion is he's going to get his MVP. He's going to retire.
Yeah,
I think he retires. As you can see, no offensive coordinator wants to work with Jalen Hurts. We've seen that through this interview process with Philadelphia. Nobody wants to, do that when it comes to Jalen Hurts. You know what I'm saying? They just don't want to be the guy who teaches them for whatever reason. So I think Philly's going to be in a different situation as well. But, you know, you look at the NFC North. Yeah, the NFC North is going to always be tough. You know, I know that Minnesota's probably real tight right now. I know Minnesota's real tight right now that they let Darnold walk. Jordan Love, he's a solid quarterback. We're going to have battles, but Caleb's going to be better. So I look at it like, as long as the Bears do what they got to do this offseason, honestly, nothing in the NFL is linear. This is not like Major League Baseball or the NBA where you can say, okay, we made it to this round next year. We're going to make it to this round. No, you might not. NFL is a week-to-week league and a year-to-year league. Next year's story could be completely different. But I just think the Bears are in a great position to do that if they have the right offseason. Like you said, yeah, I believe it's easier to rebuild the offensive line overnight than it is rebuild the defense. I don't even think the entire defense has to be rebuilt. I still think the strength of this defense is the secondary. You saw how well it played even when they were somewhat healthy. And I say somewhat because Jalen Johnson was not healthy all season, and I give him credit just for being on the field. But you saw when they had Kyler, when they had everybody, it looked so much different. Linebackers, I hate to say this in this today, but in today's game, linebackers are very interchangeable. Like, we went two games with none of our starting linebackers, and we actually did pretty good. You know what I'm saying? It's about rebuilding the D-line, which I also don't think the D-line is as bad as we make it, because I think the D-line has a lot of player twos. If you get a player one, I think that elevates it to another level. If you get a guy to add with a Montez Sweat, I think it gets better. You know what I'm saying? I think the defensive line is going to be easier to fix than the offensive line was. Yes, they had Darnell Wright. We forget we were questioning Darnell Wright last year. Everybody was like, I don't know. Should have took Jalen Carter. Now it's like, he wasn't just like, you know, I don't care about Pro Bowl, especially seeing right. Shador made it. And I like Shador, but nigga. So all pro is what I care about. And Darnell Wright, all pro. But you see what Joe Tooney added, what Drew Dahlman added, what Jonah Jackson added. You know, Caleb cut his sacks in half. That never happens. A lot has to go with the offensive line. I think also a lot has to do with Caleb learning how to avoid sacks. Because as we said last year, half of those sacks was on Caleb. So yep. I think it was a mix. But I think if they can find a way to retool this defensive line. And like you said, in today's era of football, you do not need to have a Houston Texans like defense. Does it help? 100%. But if you have a 15th ranked defense and you got a number 5 ranked offense with a quarterback like Caleb, you can win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. I do think when it comes to, like, if you want to be a good team and really be, like, competitive, I think top 12 defense, like, you need to have it. Like, I'm looking right now at the playoff teams that we saw. Total defense, Texans were first, Broncos were second. The Seahawks were in at around 7 total defense. Now, obviously, DVOA would make Seahawks the best. The Bills were right after, the Patriots right after. So, like, they're in that mix. But when you go down, yards per game allowed, Bears are sitting like it. I want to say this is 29. So, like, that's just not going to work for a playoff team or a consistent playoff team, because not too far from them are the Niners. And we saw what happened to the Niners because they had such a shitty defense. Got absolutely destroyed. And I think a top 12, I don't know why I chose 12. I just, like, top 10 is, like, a lot, but 12?
Top 10 is a lot. 12, I agree. Yeah.
Right, 12 is, like, you're right in that mix. You know what I mean? And, no, I think when you have such a great defense, I feel like that means the offense is going to have to suffer in one way. Yeah, I think when you have so many resources on one side of the ball, like, unbelievable, the other suffers.
Have we ever seen a Super Bowl team where the offense was just as good as the defense? I don't think we have. It's either one or the other.
The Broncos with Peyton were interesting because on the year they won, the defense was incredible.
The offense was god awful.
But years prior, it was equal.
The 2014 and 2016 Brady teams were pretty level.
They were nuts.
Because New England had number one defense. I think the Patriot offense was like 2 or 3. Yeah, that's probably what it was, yeah.
I'm looking at total offense in 2014. Was it the 2014 season or was it the 2013
season? It was 2014 season when it was Patriots Seahawks.
The Patriots were 12 on offense. Mm-hmm. On defense, they were 12.
It was still level.
Right, for sure. I guess what I mean by that is very hard for me to see if you have a number one defense and a number one offense. That's a lot. It doesn't happen often. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it doesn't happen often. Even like with the top ones now, they're out the playoffs.
Here's a question for you. What do you think is I don't think you can do it with either one, but which one in today's game could you win a Super Bowl with more? A number one defense number one offense and like a 25th ranked defense, 25th ranked offense, a number one ranked defense. Which one do you think you're going to win?
Ranked offense.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't win with such a bad offense. Like, it just can't happen because the other team is probably going to be scoring faster than you. Like, yeah, you'll shut them down. Because, I mean, even with the defense, as good as it is, in the playoffs, you're not holding most teams down to 6, 12, 15 points. They're going to score more. So even like the battle of the Rams and the Seahawks, I never expected this to just be, at least I hope I didn't, or say anything like that. I didn't expect it to just be a defensive battle. I'm like, they're going to score. Why wouldn't they? It's the playoffs. You prepared for this. The inhibitions go. You put everything on the line. You're literally playing as hard as you possibly can. Because after this, it's over. I do think if you have a higher ranked offense and a lower ranked defense, you can win. So I say with the Bears, the offense was consistent. They'd probably be in the NFC Championship game right now. Do I think they would have won? No.
I think, to me, it's kind of funny because I think it varies by sport. In most sports, I would agree with the offense. Like with the NFL, I agree with how that goes. Like, I think you would rather have a high ranked offense over that. Funny thing with baseball, I would rather have a great pitching staff and a great bullpen with an opportunistic offense than the other way around. Because there's nothing worse because baseball is like you can score a lot of runs, but you can go on a drought. You can be the number one offense in the league and you just can't hit the side of the ball for about a month and a half. You know what I'm saying? But at least you're pitching can keep you in games. You know what I'm saying? So basketball, in today's game, you don't need defense. You really don't. Like, how many three-pointers can you shoot? So with the NFL, I 100% agree with that. But move on to top offseason needs. Obviously, we want to talk about defense. But before I get – I didn't get your opinion on this because this happened after we recorded. What did you think about the State of the Union address last week with Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles at House Hall?
I didn't mind it. I like the fact that Ben Johnson is honest enough with himself and with his players and with the media and fans that it's like, man, that don't mean shit. Like, yeah, it's cool, but if we believe we can build on that, we are sorely mistaken. And I see both sides because, yeah, you know, you can say you build on it because even the team that won the next year built on their previous failures. But their approach is that I am not going to just sit and rest on the laurels of this season. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to make sure that I'm clean as a clean slate. And we're acting as if we're at the bottom and we have to go to the top because at the end of the day, that's what it is. And I saw that I think it was just a basic, you know, exit interview from the media. Nothing crazy. So I liked it, you know, but obviously words are just one thing. It's not really the most important.
Yeah, words are one thing, but I also feel like I agree, but I also feel like messages should be strong. And I think this is the first one that I went to where I didn't just feel like it was coach speak or GM speech. I feel like for the first time, I feel like both the coach and the GM are on the same mind frame. But what I also got from it, let's not get it fucked up. Yes, Ryan Poles is the GM, but Ben Johnson calls the shots at 1920 football drop. I think that is pretty clear. Even Ryan said himself, he said, I'm not going to bring in a player that Ben don't want. You know what I'm saying? So this is a collaboration, which is how I feel it should be. I don't feel like it's like that much in American sports. As I've ventured into the world of European football, managers are kind of like fake GMs at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Like if the manager don't want them, well, at least with Arsenal is. Mikel Arteta don't want nobody, want this person. They not coming. It's just that simple. And I kind of feel like it's that with the Bears here where – you know, and that's why I think, and not to take anything away from Ryan Poles, because I think Ryan Poles had an excellent draft this past year. Excellent. Almost all of them hit and played some type of role, even like a Ruben Hippolyte even played a role a little bit when people got injured. So,
Michael Jackson, I mean, he was very good in filling in for TJ.
Yeah. And so I feel like, but I also feel like Ben was in that room like, we need this type of player. And that's why I feel more confident about Ryan Poles making the Bulls. And I think this year is going to be more of a, okay, on the defensive side, where do we go? Well, D.A., what do you want? Now, John, I know you got to go out for a second. So I'm going to go to the next, what I think should be the next moves with this, as Joe has to take care of something real quick. But, you know, when you look at the defense, and we talk about top offseason needs. Obviously, defense is number one, more specifically the defensive line. But what on the defensive line is needed? I've had this discussion with a couple of the homies in the group chat. We always talk about the Bears because honestly, we don't have nothing else to talk about. But is it an edge player or is it a three tech? I think that both are equally needed, but I kind of feel like you need an edge. I feel like if you can have a dominant edge player and you have it on both sides, that frees the game up for your three tech and for your other defensive linemen in the middle to pull up more pressure up front. I think Montez Sweat had a very professional year. I think professional is the best way to put it. Yeah, double-digit sacks for the first time in his career, double-digit sacks with one team. And as far as pressure goes, he was one who gave the most pressure. Now, obviously, when you pay somebody over $100 million, around $100 million, you know, you want more of a dominant performance. But I really think Tez is a good number two. I think Tez is a guy, if you can go out there and you can get you a Myles Garrett or a Max Crosby or even a guy like a Trey Hendrickson. And I know I saw some people say he'd be a year too late on Trey Hendrickson. I don't agree with that. I think Trey Hendrickson has a lot more left. I think he can give you one or 2 years. I think you can get him on a reasonable deal. And I think the most ethical way to do that is maybe sign him and maybe trade for Chris Jones if the Chiefs are willing to sell him. But I like I said last week on I'm Not Gonna Hold You, I just feel like the Bears are gonna go big fish hunting. Now, whether they get them or not is a different question. To get a Max Crosby, or more specifically a Myles Garrett, that price tag is going to be very, very expensive, especially for a Myles Garrett. And with a big contract that you're gonna have to take in, and you know, but I feel like the Bears have to go all in. The Bears have to go all in. I say the Bears have to go all in is because you don't want to. First of all, I think a sports championship window is the most overrated / we take for granted thing in sports. Windows really ain't that long. All it takes is for one team to get better or, you know, somebody to get hurt, something happen, and boof, your window's closed. I personally think that the Bills and the Ravens window are closed. Now, that doesn't mean they're never going to get a Super Bowl or they're never going to make it. I just mean their current window, I believe, is closed. You know, you got two new coaches. Joe Brady just got hired as new coach of the Bills. And I forgot the name of the Ravens head coach, but he was a defensive coordinator somewhere. He used to work with the Ravens. This is a new era now. And so for the Bears, I think they got to go all in. You got to go all in. Take advantage of the moment. And more importantly, take advantage of the rookie contract that Caleb is on. Caleb had a great year this year. I think, health permitting, he's going to be scary next year. And you know what that means for 2027? He's going to be a very rich man, okay? He's going to be a very rich man that's going to take up a great amount of your cap, and then you got to get creative. We saw how it impacted Kansas City when they had to pay Pat. You see how it's impacted both Buffalo and Baltimore when they had to pay Lamar and when they had to pay Josh. It just decimates you. But it's also something that you have to do because it's your franchise quarterback. So take advantage of it now. If there's an opportunity to get a Max Crosby or a Myles Garrett, it's going to be expensive. But you just got to go all in and you live with, put all your chips on the table and you live with it. Yes, the Bears didn't get a championship when they went to go trade to get Khalil Mack. I still love they went and go got in Khalil Mack. They tried. And that was, they hoped a lot more Mitch. Caleb has shown you way more than Mitch has, which I feel should make you more comfortable about shooting a Hail Mary than it would be there. So, and I feel that one thing I love about Ryan Poles is he's sensible. He thinks things through. He's not somebody who's a panic mover, but I need him to act like he in Vegas, gamble for a little bit this offseason when it comes like getting the big fish. Because what I was saying when you left, I think getting the edge player is the most important thing for this defense. Do you think it's the edge? Do you think it's a three tech? Or what on the defensive do you think is the number one thing? Like, if the Bears had to spend a good amount of resources to get this type of player in, what would it be for you?
I would probably say the best thing for them to get is a three tech, just interior lineman, period. I need defensive tackles. They need defensive tackles across the board. An edge is good. An edge is overrated. Now, I know people are going to say, this is crazy. This is nuts. Edges are so important to get the sacks and all this. Yes. But if I had to ask myself right now, who would I want to start my defensive line? Would I want someone with the skill of a TJ Watt, which is great, incredible defensive lineman, going to be a Hall of Fame, or someone with the skill of an Aaron Donald? I'm going to take the Aaron Donald. Bear in mind, you're choosing from incredible players, incredible talent that are both needed on a team, but I want that Aaron Donald first. Because TJ Watt is only going to be successful if is that interior offensive lineman. An edge's success does not necessarily mean the interior lineman is going to be good. If that line is getting compressed, compacted, and that quarterback is pressing backwards, it makes it easier for that defensive edge to get there. I think for me, that's a simple facet of reason. And so I would take that interior first. Montez Sweat is a solid player. Austin Booker is not his equal in talent, but Austin Booker, Montez Sweat would be even better if that interior were good. If, you know, if this was Grady and Javon and they were both getting consistent pressure, rushes, sacks, tackles for loss, we probably would have saw Montez Sweat with about 13 sacks. Austin Booker, I think he finished with like 4 sacks on the year. It may have been 4 sacks, including the postseason. We may 4.5. We may have seen him get about 6 or 7. And that comes from the pressure on the interior lineman. So the first thing first would have to be interior lineman. You got to make sure you're getting great interior lineman, because if you have those settled, then the pressure doesn't come to finding game breakers and game changers at every other position. Now, the day of the linebacker in the National Football League has changed, and we're not really at that stage anymore. We're not looking for Urlachers and Ray Lewis's across the board now, because one, a lot of teams are playing nickel. A lot of teams have nickel as a base. So what you're starting to look for, again, excuse the bell in my job, what you're starting to look for are safeties who can play on the line and can play deep, who can both rush the quarterback, who can both fill in a spot to get the running back to the edge or whatever, or the C-gap if the running back is getting there, and also can make sure that nothing goes over top, and who can pick the player to guard carefully. And because of that, the linebacker becomes not as important. Now, you need a good middle. You need a good inside linebacker. That's always going to be a necessity, because as great as a safety or big DB is, he ain't hitting the hole like a linebacker is. But the outside linebackers are much more expendable, especially when we're seeing linebackers like, I forgot he used to play for the Cowboys and the Packers, and I forgot what he was asking for, something crazy. And I remember somebody said, yeah, I'm not paying that for outside linebacker. Now, back in the day, you probably be like, no, I'm paying what he wants. But now you're like, no. And I think for me, his name was number six. I forgot his name. But I think for me, that started the trend. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I want the outside linebacker for that much. The market changes. Now, bear in mind, this could change. This could change. The same way running backs at one point were like, I ain't wasting a first-round pick on that. Now you're like, shit, I could get a Jahmyr Gibbs or Bijan Robinson or a Christian McCaffrey. I'm paying that. So linebackers will just have to adapt more. But right now, the focus should be on your interior lineman. My first two picks will be interior defensive tackles. I can do fine with Javon Dexter, Steve's op, in a role as depth as the second, but he's not a starting defensive lineman.
Does Steve hate Javon more than I hate Pena Tillman?
Probably, because for him, he didn't like the signing, the drafting of Javon, period. He was like, man, you know, he's strong. And he makes the thing when he gets past it, but he has no technique. He stands up immediately. So
nothing makes me angrier than when people say he's a Hall of Famer. I get irate. You know how they give like honorary stuff in a Hall of Fame? Like somebody has a great game, they put a jersey. They should put like his jersey in there because he invented the peanut punch. That is it.
Go ahead, my bad. it's right now has to be interior line.
All right, let's go to best and worst. I want to talk about what was the best we saw from Ben Johnson, what was the best we saw from Caleb Williams. I'm gonna start first. So my best, you good, better, best. My best from Ben this year is his way to bounce back from tough situations and being able to adjust, period. I think he's a good, you know, we've had crappy halves, and then they come out in the second half, he's much better at adjusting to the game, which is a key thing for any coach in any sport. What was Lovie Smith's Achilles heel? Adjustments. Lovie will do something that didn't work in the first half, come out in the second half and do the same shit, and then be wondering why they lost the game every time. So that would be the number one thing I would give credit to Ben about. The worst thing about Ben to me this season, and I think it's probably something that a lot of coaches have problems with, but I think for me the worst thing with him was he gets in his own way a lot of times. And I also think that's something a lot of offensive gurus do. Sean McVay completely bozo-gened the end of that game. In the NFC Championship game, me and you were screaming on Twitter, go for two, twice. I just don't understand it. Going for the fourth and four made no sense. He did some bonehead stuff at the end of the Bears game too, but we let him be off the hook. So I think the thing with Ben is sometimes he needs to understand when to keep the ball in your quarterback's hand, and sometimes you understand when it's time to run the ball, let's just make it simple. You know, a lot of times he'll run the ball where you need to, but he don't call the right play. So that's why I would say the best and worst. Now, with Caleb, best and worst, pretty easy. Best, he's clutch. Yeah. The things that you can't teach about a quarterback, he has. You can't teach clutch gene. You can't teach being able to freestyle. I think he's the best when he freestyles. Tom Brady made this comparison, and Tom Brady's not the only one, but it's also my ultimate comparison too. Comparing him to Steph Curry is the best comparison. I know some people like to compare Pat to Steph Curry, and I get it, but the reason I don't like that, because Pat is great in structure, and he's great in freestyling. Steph is good in structure, obviously, but when Steph just getting the, you know, shoulder shrug, shimmy, I'm Chef Curry mode. There's just, you can't, there's nothing you can do. You know, we saw that when they were winning. He even still does it now. When Caleb gets into, okay, I don't care nothing about the playbook or what did Mike tell text with him, sorry about the triangle text. When he getting the sorry about the triangle text mode, he's great. The worst is being the structure, knowing when to. He has so much faith in his arm that sometimes I think he overestimates what he can do, and it leads to bad mistakes. So I think once he masters the small stuff, which is much easier, God bless, because then there's going to be no way to stop him. I don't know if you saw Aiden Hutchinson say on NFL Live that he's the toughest quarterback he's tried to say. He said, I've been right there, and I couldn't bring him down. And right. That's why I think would be the best and the worst for Ben and for Caleb. What would you say about it would be for them?
The best for me is, for some reason, I have to just do it game-wise. Like, what game exemplified what I think is the worst of them? Both Detroit games. Both Detroit games, it seems like Ben Johnson got in his own head, similar to what you said, and did not think, let me just do the simple things and make them work. And then the first Detroit game, it was early then, he did not trust Caleb to do what Caleb does. The second Detroit game was a little bit different. The second Detroit game, he's like, okay, he had a little bit more trust. He allowed Caleb to do more, considering that the Bears only lost by three as opposed to losing 52-21 earlier. But he still got in his own way, and that really hurt him the most. His best, if we're talking complete game, I would probably have to go to that Dallas game. I think that Dallas game, not only did you see like four TDs from Caleb, like 298. I mean, he had almost 76% completion rating. I think he coordinated well with Dennis Allen, the defense, the special teams. I saw like a complete game from them. And so for me, it's the games where he takes it as, hey, almost like we got nothing to lose. Bears were 0-2 going into that Dallas game. In that Dallas game, it was training was off. Let's see what you got. Let's see what the defense can do. Let's see what Caleb can do. And it proved to be great. Ever since then, it's like a battle of will he allow Caleb to do what Caleb does. Now going to Caleb, it's almost exactly the same. Caleb, he has work to do in structure. At the beginning of the season, he was terrible in structure. Clutch gene is always there. And I would rather have a quarterback who needs help, you know, really formulating and getting better at the fundamentals as opposed to I have to teach him the intangibles. Because you can't really teach the intangibles, you know? Someone like a Baker Mayfield got better in structure when he went to a new team and got a change of scenery. Had a typical Baker Mayfield year this year, but he got really better once he came to Tampa Bay, learning how to play in structure. And then when it's time to play out of structure, he obviously already had that. It's analogous to someone like Sam Darnold, previous Sam Darnold, who was fine in structure, but when he needed to do outside of that, sucked. This year, you know, he was a pretty solid game manager. In the playoffs, he just started to take off. But Caleb needs to absolutely learn to plant his feet. And he said that at the end of the game that they lost in the division to plant my feet, you know, make sure my footwork is good. Because, yeah, you got a strong arm. But, man, when you step through that throw, you get your whole body involved. You get your hips involved. You get the power from your legs involved. It's like if I throw a punch, if I just punch with my arm, I'm sure I could hurt somebody, but when I step through and I'm making sure that I'm not telegraphing and I'm not coming out here, I'm going straight for my hip and I'm leaning into you with a nice punch, man, it's a night and day difference. Same thing with Caleb. When he steps into his passes, you know, when he relies on his footwork, he is a dangerous, dangerous player. And I'm glad and happy that we saw that a lot more. Like there are some plays where you can't step through it. That pass to Cole Kmet on fourth down, there's no time to step through it. You have to literally get some space, look, let it rip in however way you can. There are plays like the flea flicker against Dallas where he steps in through it, absolute on-the-money bomb to Luther Burden. Then there are plays like that interception against the Rams to DJ Moore, did not set his feet, trust his arm too much. So if he really works on really tightening that, you know, the sky's the limit. Because when he gets to be Caleb, man, he's dangerous. I think he's already amongst the best in the league for being clutch, for having those let Caleb be Caleb moments, because he just doesn't fear the moment. So getting in structure for Caleb, allowing Caleb to be Caleb for Ben, and then putting it together and not being afraid to fail. Because I think when they do that, man, they're dangerous. Dangerous as hell.
Definitely, man. Let's talk about potential coaching exits and things like that. So we just got a report from, I think this is Tom Pelissero. Let me double check. Here we go. So I just tweeted somebody on the page, and I wanted to get your opinion on this. So, all right, let me see. So from Jeremy Fowler, Bears assistant GM Ian Cunningham will do in a second in-person interview for the Atlanta Falcons general manager job this week. So he sounds like he's, if that second interview goes well, he might be general manager. Bad thing is Bears won't get comp picks. Personally, don't really care too much about comp picks. I know I've seen a couple people say, oh, they should block that.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CARGURUS.com. Cargurus.com.
What you got to understand, man, is what fans got to understand, that they, I feel like some don't understand. Football and sports are about relationships. Ryan Poles isn't going to block a job opportunity for one of his guys, especially a black man, because of some damn conflicts. It's just not going to happen. There's been rumors about Al Harris leaving. He interviewed with the Green Bay Packers. He interviewed with the Tennessee Titans. And there was another team he interviewed with as well to be that defensive coordinator. Declan Doyle turned down a second interview with, I want to call him Declan Rice. Declan Doyle almost turned down a second interview with the Eagles, but he has been requested to have an interview with the Baltimore Ravens. We'll see whether he takes that or not. But we're seeing, you know, Eric Bieniemy is already offensive coordinator back in Kansas City again. I look at it like this, man. If you have coaches leaving, that means you have a great staff. And the reason why I'm not too much worried about it is because you have two of the most important positions filled. You got your head coach, your play caller, your defensive coordinator has already had a shot in the league. He's not going to get another one. So I think you're in solid positions there as well. I think obviously it sucks when these people leave. I'm not worried about Antoine Randall. He hasn't gotten any interviews. And also I think the title that I don't think a lot of people pay attention to, and I pay attention to this when he got hired, he's assistant head coach. Like, he's not just a wide receiver coach. That assistant head coach title is very important. When I saw he got that last year, I was like, oh, he's going to be here for a while. That's basically telling me that unless I'm getting something high ranking, like offensive coordinator or head coaching job, there's no other position that will be higher than what I have right now. And that also shows you the trust that Ben has in him from working with him in Detroit.
Yeah.
So I think that also when you have a guy like Ben, I think that he's going to always find good assistance. You know what I'm saying? And I think when you put together a good staff, that means your team's doing well. If people don't want your assistance, that means you stink. So I think it's just part of the game that comes with it. What do you think about potential coaching, leaving it, and if Ian Cunningham does get a shot in Atlanta?
With Ian Cunningham, it's probably about time for him to do that. And, you know, they're important. You know, a running backs coach is important. A coordinator is important. But when you have a strong system in place, it becomes easier to find the best people. When you have executives and front office members who are patient and keen on finding the best people, it becomes a lot easier. Right now, with someone like Eric Bieniemy, fans might think, oh, it's just a running back coach. But a running back coach really takes what the offensive coordinator gives the players, the scheme, what's happening, and breaks it down in a way that's digestible, tells them, hey, this is what you need to do to fill that leverage. You know, hey, you're seeing an extra rusher come off the edge. You want to help your tackle out. When he says chip, what do you mean by chip? Some people think, oh, it's just, you know, toss your hands. No, man, get a good push in it. Get your shoulders in it. Maybe get your legs lower. They really help break down the game for their running backs. Every coach does, the wide receivers coach, the lineman coach. So they're very important. Eric Bieniemy, someone who should have been the head coach by now, is absolutely important at that because he also knows what it's like to call plays as a coordinator. So he's absolutely important. But I do think it's not extremely difficult to find someone who may not be able to be as good as him, but really holds up that line well. So finding him is good, but I don't know if it's key. But I will be sad to see him go to someone like Al Harris, man. I think Al Harris is the really slept on pick here. I think it was actually detrimental for the Packers to not sign him. And then just to get Jonathan Gannett, they had another coach. They could have, was it Lockhart? I forgot his name, that they could have waited on, but they were just flustered to get a coach. And that's the mistake that you don't want to make in hiring, but having Al Harris back will absolutely be a benefit because he knows the position. I know some fans are like, he's going to go to the Packers, brother. He played for the Packers. I think I had to tell Scott that he played for the Packers. That's where he's from. That's where he's from playing wise, his home. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I got tight for 5 minutes and I forgot that he was.
Right. Him coming to the Bears was the sacrilegious part.
Yeah.
Not the opposite. Somebody like Antoine Rundle, like you said, he has a higher position than most think. You know, happy to have him back. You got your coordinator. DA did have his chance. He's going to be here for a while. It's the same thing with like Vic Fangio in Philly. That boy ain't getting another head coach job. He's going to be there for a while. So you're squared away. And then most importantly, in today's NFL, a head coach who's an offensive play caller is the way to go. Now, there are exceptions to this. You have someone like, who is Seattle's coach? I can't think of his name. But you have the Seahawks head coach who does not have that same offensive background. He's doing just fine. He's absolutely doing just fine. But I do think it's pretty consistent in the league when the head coach, if they're not like the play caller, they're at least really, really tuned in with that offense. Mike McDonald, I think it was his name. He's the defensive coordinator from the Ravens. And he's pretty much been a defensive coach, linebacker. He even was a defensive coordinator for that team up north, unfortunately. So when you have that, you do have a better chance. Now, again, I'm pretty sure my argument sort of gets messed up when you think about the fact that Mike Vrabel was a linebacker. However, I do want to say he's done some offensive consulting around this. So it's still, he's still primary defensive coordinator. However, I think the best teams seem to consistently have an offensive coach. Whether that's someone like an Andy Reid, who was an offensive person, even if he wasn't the primary play caller often or all the time, he was. So I think because you have Ben Johnson, you're okay in that category. But besides that, I do think right now the Bears will be fine if, you know, a coordinator or two leaves, because you want to set the structure and then allow the players to, you know, allow the good coaches to come in. Because I mean, Ben Johnson is a prime example. When you're really good at your job as a coordinator, you're gone. You're gone. So, like, yeah, you want the best talent or the best at coaching, but what comes with that is them leaving.
Yeah, which is why it's so risky to hire a defensive head coach in an offensive landscape, which is why I look at who the Ravens hired. You know, it's just like if they get a good offensive coordinator to – work with Lamar. If Lamar goes out there and has another great season and the Ravens get to the AFC Championship game where they made the Super Bowl, guess what? That nigga's gone. Okay? So that's why I think Detroit took a step back, because it's good of a coach as Dan Campbell is, and I really like Dan Campbell. He's having a hard time replacing Ben Johnson. So that's what it is. So wrap this up, man. Award predictions. Now, I don't have the awards in front of me. Do you have the actual awards in front of you? Who is nominated and things like that? I know we can. I know there's MVP, there's Coach of the Year.
I do it. I do. First up, the it's funny. I'm looking at NFL.com and it's AP Most Valuable Player presented by Invisalign. So Most Valuable Player, we have Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence, Drake May, Christian McCaffrey, Matthew Stafford.
My first of all, I love Josh Allen, but him being nominated here is
like, I don't love Josh Allen. He's every single quarterback. There's an era of quarterbacks who media, typically the national media, that's their golden boy, and they tend to.
So who was the golden boy in the last era? I don't know who was the golden boy. Was Brady the golden boy?
Brady won though, so I don't know if like that. You know, it's he did that. I would probably say for a long time he won, and so it's like, and he got MVP, and it's like, But I think right now because. I think Peyton Manning was partially that.
But Peyton Manning was at first, like first couple years. After like the third loss of the Patriots, they started butchering him.
Right. I do think it's a lot different in today's day and age because we have so much more access to media. So like, I don't really think the age of the media golden boy really started until like 2018. 2017, you know, that it really late 2010s because there was just so much more access to not only to media, but to the teams, to the coaches. And so that's when I think we started to have that. And I think Josh Allen is the inaugural pick for a golden.
So basically you're kind of like with CM Punk told John Cena a decade ago. I don't hate you, John. I hate the idea of you.
Yeah. Cause like, I'm looking at Josh Allen's stats and I'm like, yeah, he's a good player. He's number two quarterback in the league. But what about his stats makes me think he's amongst the best? It's like, well, you have 14 rushing touchdowns. I'm like, touchdowns matter. But when you're 6'6", big as shit, and you're at the one-yard line, like, I don't hold Jalen Hurts rushing touchdown. I'm like, you got pushed there. And you're 1 yard away, you know? And so I struggle to say, it's like for me, when LT broke that rushing touchdown record, it was touchdowns from all over the field. If LT broke that doing primarily rushing touchdowns, I'd be like, yeah. Like, yeah, you're there. You're supposed to get it. Now, obviously, not everybody does, but a good team is supposed to get a quick 1, 2, 3 yard rushing touchdown. Obviously, those weren't all of his. But last year, I'm pretty sure they did a breakdown. It was like in between 5 yards, and he had like freaking 8. I'm like, you know, so I get it. And then on top of that, it seems like his interceptions don't have as much weight. It's like, well, you know, he put it there, and it's like, no. It matters. It counts. It's a thing. So he is the golden boy. Anyway, but going back to the most valuable player, my most valuable player would be Matthew Stafford. I don't think that you can really – I don't think you can really argue against it. Now, Drake May obviously has a division title. And did the Rams get the division title? No.
Nah, Seattle.
They didn't get division titles.
Right, see, right. You know, the NFL is weird. NFL don't really care. That's like how NBA picked the MVP.
That's true. But I don't think you can pass up the fact that Matthew Stafford passed for so many yards at his age and led a – while they do have Puka, it's a lot of elderly players outside of them. And the defense is fine. But if Matthew Stafford isn't there, they're not going to win anywhere near that amount of games. He's almost passing for 5,000 yards in this NFL. He threw 46 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, 65% completion rating. I don't think you could pass it up. He had 5 4-plus touchdown games. And as great as Drake May is, especially the fact that he's a second-year player, I think part of it comes in the fact that he's a second-year player. You know, he's a second-year player. Yeah. You're like, oh, man. But Matthew Stafford is doing this. He's almost 38 years old. Both had the same amount of interceptions, but Matthew Stafford threw, almost like 17 more touchdowns. It's like, I can't, 15 more. I can't pass it up. So for me, Matthew Stafford is MVP.
Yeah, to me, I don't even think it's that much of a competition. I thought Drake May had a really good year, but like, as I always say with Drake May, I have eyes. Okay, y'all can't fool me with your advanced stats and all the other. And that's not me saying Drake May is bad. Whenever I comment about Drake May, people think I be acting like Drake May is trash. I think Drake May is really good. I think Drake May is way better than I ever thought he would. Drake May could be at this level for the rest of his career, and yeah, he is overachieved, in my opinion. Like Bomani said on his show yesterday, he said, Drake May, if you win this championship in 2 weeks, you're good forever. Because you got – that's your protection. I won the championship my second year. Y'all over here talking about Lamar and Josh Allen, where they rings at? They ain't even touched the grass. So I think Drake is good. I thought the Patriots, being a pick number three, hit a home run. Having said all of that, what Matthew Stafford this year did with this year was incredible. Yeah. And I think when it comes to these voters, I know people don't want to hear it because people got mad at it last year when Josh Allen – of one narrative matters. It just is what it is. To me, there's only one sport where they only vote strictly off stats, and that is Major League Baseball.
And yeah, Major League Baseball. Yeah,
they don't. Mike Trout ain't seen October since Obama's first term, and he got like 4 or 5 of them. Okay, like
it's not like care. Oh man, let's say Mike Trout. Let's look at Shohei versus I don't know. Let's say him
and Shohei had 4 before he became a doctor.
Let's see. Right. Let's say we're looking at Shohei back on the. Let's imagine we're in a time where both Shohei and Aaron Judge, because the Angels were in the National League.
They're in the American League. See, you're in the American League. That's how bad they are.
I know. But let's say we're going back to a time where Shohei and Aaron Judge were in the same league, and Shohei has put up the numbers he has. Shohei has put up great numbers. Let's say, you know what? Let's just abandon this because it's a terrible narrative. Let's just say, yeah, player A who is. Come back from like a terrible injury that really like destroyed everything in his body. And the next year he bats 298, about 35 homers, a really great slug on base percentage, a great war, like all of those things. But he's going to go against a player who has none of that. Team is not in the playoffs. That boy batted 360 and had 60 homers and had an incredible slug on base percentage. You're going to go, I'm going to go the dude with the best stats. And that's typically how they do it. I wish every league did that.
I did to an extent. I wish I do, but I also believe with the NBA. Now, NFL, to me, I think it's a mix of stats and status. This is going to be a lifetime achievement award for Matthew Stafford. And I don't mean that in a bad way because his numbers are incredible. And I do believe that if you look at everything, the Rams had a mediocre defense. The Rams had injuries. The Rams played in the tough division. I think that he gets his MVP. We could pretty much book his trip to Canton. And y'all know I've been anti Matthew Stafford going to the Hall of Fame for a long time. But, you know, champion, Super Bowl MVP, you get a league MVP. I mean, what else they really talk about? So,
yeah,
I do believe it will be interesting. I do believe it will be Matthew Stafford.
Right. You know, it's interesting to me that before he got to LA, Matthew Stafford had 140, 1 year of like 40 plus passing touchdowns. That was his third year in the league. He gets to the Rams, who spent far less time there. I think this is his fifth season, already has 240-yard passing touchdowns. And this year, he has his most passing yards since his first year in LA. And his first year in LA was his third most passing yards ever. And he has his most passing touchdowns ever, his best TD percentage ever, his longest yards per attempt, his best yards per game. Like, he is doing incredibly well. And so, yeah, I agree. Now, AP Defensive Player of the Year, I don't think me and Scott need to have a long conversation about this.
Smiles Garrett,
but the so you know, AP Defensive Player of the Year presented by TCL, Will Anderson Jr. From Texans, Nick Bonito from the Broncos, Miles Garrett from the Browns, Aiden Hutchinson from the Lions, Micah Parsons from that other team.
I will say if Miles Garrett didn't breathe air, I would give it to Will Anderson Jr. Mm-hmm. He was incredible.
Very good. You know, another home run pick. Miles Garrett. Like, I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, it's Miles Garrett.
Broke the record, like, you know. Moving down, AP Offensive Player of the Year, Drake May, Christian McCaffrey, Puka Nacua, Bijan Robinson, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I have such a beef with you including a QB in this.
Yeah, QB should be the MVP's award. Yeah.
If you want to make MVP the QB award, then AP needs to be a non-QB.
I agree with that.
It's bullshit to me.
I'm going JSN, baby.
I think, obviously, you know, having watched him firsthand at the Ohio State University. When he was in that Rose Bowl and had like 300 yards receiving, I was like, oh my God.
And LSU is not wide receiver. Let's cut it.
I was arguing with
you. Like, we're doing a lot of heavy lifting with Jamar and right. JJ. Like,
my biggest point is, I think if you're going to say this team is known for wide receivers, they have to consistently produce great wide receivers. We're coming off of having Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, JSN, Marvin Harrison Jr., now Carnell Tate, and then the year after will be Jeremiah Smith. Like, these are all first-round talent. And outside of Marvin Harrison, the players who here, consistent 1,000-yard receivers, what are we doing? Like, it's clearly wide receiver you.
Are the Ravens linebacking you because they had Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs? No, I think it's us.
You know what I mean? So that's what I think. I think quantity and quality is more important than simply quality. Yes, Jamar and Justin are the number one and number two, or 1A, 1B, however you want to do it. Yeah. But who else are we talking about? So when it comes to offensive player of the year, I got to give it to JSN. And I think that's JSN. I think, like, just get the fucking QB out of it. My opinion is, I think you need to do like college, and there needs to be an award for every position. You know,
just have QB of the year.
Right, QB of the year. You know, like in college, you have your Maxwell Award, all those things that details the best player at their position. You need to have a best QB, best running back, best wide receiver, best tight end, best offensive defensive lineman, best linebacker, best defensive back. Leave it at that. Best quarterback. Obviously, you leave it at that, it's best. So my offensive player of the year will be JSN. AP Rookie of the Year, Jackson Dart, Emeka Ebuka, Travion Henderson, Tetroy Miller, Tyler Shuck.
Tyler Shuck.
Oh.
This is a tough one.
It's not tough for me.
Because I'm going
to Emeka Ebuka from Emeka Ebuka, another receiver. I'm going to go Emeka Ebuka. Next up will probably be Travion Henderson. Travion Henderson coming out of
line. I got to say about Jackson Dart, some people expect way too much about him. I'm sorry.
They do.
I'm sorry. Yeah. First of all, he got to stay on the field, number one, which I do not think he will do.
No.
But good.
After him would probably be Travion Henderson with like almost 1,000 yards rushing.
Yeah, that's why I was
concerned. 9 TDs, 200 yards, one touchdown. I'm going to go him, but Emeka will be my rookie of the year. AP Defensive Player of the Year, Xavier Watts, safety Falcons, Carson Schwechinger from the Cleveland Browns linebacker, James Pierce from the Falcons.
So this is the defense. I thought we did the Defensive Player of the Year.
Rookie.
Oh, defensive rookie. Okay.
Nick Amenwori and Abdul Carter from the Giants. Abdul Carter?
Yeah, I'm going to go Abdul.
Abdul Carter?
Yeah.
Next up. AP comeback player of the year, Stephon Diggs, Aiden Hutchinson, Trevor Lawrence, Christian McCaffrey, Dak Prescott. I'm going to go Christian McCaffrey. After that, I probably would go Aiden Hutchinson.
I'm going trick off trail, man.
I'm not mad at that either.
Trick off trail.
I think these are one of two award positions where I think, you know, I'm not mad at either.
Yeah.
Next up, we have AP coach of the year, Liam Cohen.
This is Ben tough.
It's very tough. Liam Cohen, Ben Johnson, Mike McDonald, Kyle Shanahan, Mike Vrabel.
I'm going to be biased. I'm giving it to Ben Johnson. I'm sorry. I'll be biased.
I have several things. I'm not giving it to Mike McDonald.
Giving it to Mike Vrabel.
Right. I'm not giving it to – now, Mike Vrabel and Mike McDonald are my two coaches that I was not giving the award to because I think they're coming from a much better foundation now.
Yeah.
Of course – we're talking about games. I think the Patriots, they won like four games last year, which, of course, is consideration. But, again, in a league where narrative matters, I'm not picking McDonald or Vrabel because I think that's a much better franchise they're coming to the turn.
Smarter GM, smarter ownership in both sides.
Right. Kyle Shanahan absolutely gets recognition for having to battle so many issues on defense. However, you still had a ridiculously talented team, and I'm not going to give you coach of the year, which leaves us at Liam Cohen and Ben Johnson. And between Liam Cohen obviously is coming from a team that has really slacked off in the last couple of years. Who is it? Doug Peterson was the previous coach. And so I do have to acknowledge that before he came in here, I mean, last year they won four games. Before that, they were 9-9. And I think that was all of Doug Peterson's era. But if we're going narrative again, I cannot give it to him. And the reason I cannot give it to him is, again, outside of a bad year with Trevor Lawrence at the helm and a few of those players, it was still a franchise that had been to the playoffs relatively recent. If we're talking about the Bears, there has been nothing over 500 since 2018. There has been one wild card, one playoff game, well, two playoff games since 2018. In the years leading up to that, completely under 500. And it's because of that that I might have, I don't think I'm, obviously, I can't say I don't think I'm being biased because I'm a Bears fan.
We're all naturally being biased, but the rot that was in this, like this rot in Jacksonville, I mean, they made the playoffs a couple years ago. You know, Doug Peterson's first year, they made playoffs and won a playoff game.
Now, I don't think playoffs get counted into the coach of the year.
They don't, but I'm just saying narrative-wise.
Right, that's why I would say you're coming from a team that hasn't won their division since 2018 and hasn't really beat the Packers in such a manner, and they're at home in quite a long time. Because of that, I think Ben Johnson wins coach of the year.
I think not only do I want him to win coach of the year, I think he's going to win coach of the year because I hate to say this, Jacksonville people, nobody gives a shit about the Jaguars. I think if it's anything that the Bears fans and the Bears crew to people this year, we are the needle movers, okay? We are the charter franchise. I used to hate the charter franchise. No, we are the charter franchise, okay? Right. If I was a Rams fan, I'd been so angry at the coverage last week. You would have thought the Bears would have won. There was a Carol post every other day.
We got one more award. AP Assistant Coach of the Year, Vic Fangio, Eagles DC, Brian Flores, Vikings DC, Vance Joseph, Broncos DC, Clint Kubiak, Seattle Seahawks OC, and Josh McDaniels, Patriots OC. I am stuck between Vance Joseph and Josh McDaniels. The reason I would not give it to Brian Flores is like, yeah, that's great, but like, what did it do with the team in general making better? And I don't think
everybody knew that defense was good. Like,
right. Vic Fangio, yeah, I know the defense is good already. So now we're faced with Vance Joseph, Clint Kubiak, and Josh McDaniels. I'm stuck with Vance Joseph. Clint Kubiak, I thought was good. It's a good offense. I can't say I thought it was good like that. It's a good offense. However, I don't know if I would put it up there as like he deserves to get that because I'm looking at the Seahawks and I believe rushing per game they were up with like they were amongst the best. They were top five. Passing with the Seahawks, they were essentially like the Bears. They're like top 10. But when I'm thinking of Josh McDaniels, I'm thinking of a complete turnaround in Drake May. You get yourself now an MVP caliber. Vance Joseph, I think, was commanding the best defense in the league. I probably have to go with best defense Vance Joseph.
Houston's the best defense in the league. Houston's defense is frightening.
I think it was the Broncos. Also, I mean, look at where their defense went as compared to the Texans defense. Of course, that's also because of CJ Stroud. I'll never forgive him for what he did for what CJ has done to the
Ohio State name. I'll say this, I'm going to Kubiak because I feel like the Broncos is one of those teams that even when they don't really have good defenses, they're not bad. And they still have one of the best secondary league. Pass Sertan is probably the best corner in the league. So I don't want to give him that much credit for that. And Mini Hoodie, as I still like to call him, this is what he does. He's always been a good offensive coordinator. You know, he just can't be a head coach, but he's always been a good offensive coordinator. Clint Kubiak, to me, I won't say came out of nowhere because he was always solid, but this was like his magnum opus right here. Like, we all know that Kevin O'Connell saved Sam Darnold, but I feel like Kubiak got Sam Darnold over the finish line. You know what I'm saying? Which is something that we saw at the end of the year last year. Kevin O'Connell couldn't do because Sam Darnold went back to his bozo ways, and that's why they choked the division at the end of the year last year. So I give Kubiak that, and I feel like Kubiak is going to be – Tom Brady can't wait to hire Kubiak in 2 weeks.
I will
be the Raiders head coach.
Because I am a student of theology and philosophy. Your reasoning was spot on. I'm gonna go with your pick now. I think it was spot on reasoning, and for those reasons, I think that makes him the assistant coach of the year. So no, I'm down with that. I agree.
I'm gonna chop this clip up and save it because you never tell me that. So I'm gonna save this. But that's all we got for y'all today. Real solid pod today, man. We will be doing more of these. I'm gonna do some creative stuff. I'm gonna be doing a lot of top five lists. Like,
I will say, tomorrow, me and Steve will be recording. It's not a draft preview. We're not doing a draft preview.
That's I'm way early for that.
We're doing a prospect review. What I mean is prospect review. We're not talking about who the Bears should pick based upon what other teams are going to pick. We're going to essentially break down who we think is top 10 at the positions the Bears need.
Like, and that's going to be interesting because the Bears, for the first time in a long time, do not have a top 10 pick.
Right. And on top of that, like, we don't need to focus on a quarterback because who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Because the
yeah.
Bears have a quarterback. But we're going to start focusing on the interior.
Hide your money around. There's poor people around.
We're going to start focusing on interior defensive linemen, some edges, some linebackers, some cornerbacks. And surprisingly, we're going to start focusing on potentially tight ends. So as backups, obviously. So we will see. And this is, of course, is I doubt Cole Kmet is anybody's trade piece, but we'll see. And so that's me and Steve tomorrow. We're going to go over that.
Yeah, out of all the people who could possibly leave, all the vets, I think Cole Kmet is most safe. Because I also think his contract looks like a real bargain right now. So, you know, from the one he signed a couple years ago. So,
but also, his contract being a bargain does also make an attractive trade off of other teams.
There's going to be a shock trade or cut. And I think, actually, one question this, to end it on this, because me and Mikey was talking about this. My surprise trade or cut, I don't think this is going to happen. But if it did, Montez Sweat is my surprise trade or cut option.
No,
and this is why I stay surprised. They're a surprise every year. I don't if DJ left, that's not a surprise, in my opinion. I think, and by the way, I think Montez Sweat would be on this team. But if Pose feels to get a bigger fish, I got to get rid of this contract. I could see it.
I could see if like. You're trading for Myles Garrett and the Browns like nigga, we need at least a
throw pass. Me some. Like right. How they gave Frank right. How, who did the Packers give to the Cowboys when they got Micah? Some other DN.
I don't know.
I forgot his name, but yeah.
But like I'm thinking of yeah. For me, I can see that if you're the Browns and you're already getting the King's Hall of picks from the Bears, but now you're like, yes, this leaves it without a defensive end. Give us somebody with that. Sure, it's hypothetical, but I can't see it happening. DJ Moore, right, would not be a shock, though. But anyway, normally yeah. Scott's closed this episode. I'm going to close it because I am starving and I have to teach in like 30 minutes. It is your boy, Scott and Flows. Appreciate y'all for watching. Obviously, we're not live recorded this, but appreciate y'all for tuning in. That is the Barbershed Network Patreon. We have so many different tiers. We're going to keep revamping, making sure we are giving you the best. But we appreciate those who have signed on at Patreon and have been with us rocking. We really, I think this is obviously the success of the Bears is what determines how good of a season we have.
This has been our best season. In fact, I had somebody DM me today and said, yo, I need y'all to do some watch events next week. And I'm actually meeting about that next year. So I'm actually meeting right. about that next week. So we will give y'all some events.
Our followers went from like low 5,000 to mid 6,000s.
Yeah,
I mean, we're starting to see bigger accounts follow us and check in with us and say, like, you know, what's going on, getting on. I'm hoping next year, you know, me and Scott can continue to bring you the best, get more player interviews. You know, Scott's going to be holding it down with Nikhil because I will be with Child. I might be at a one or two training camp like last year.
And I'm not going to lie to y'all, I'm not going to be at training camp every day.
And I'm not mad at that.
I'm getting 2 to 3 a week.
But you know the funny thing is, it's also because of last year was the Caleb, and then before it was the Justin effect. What's Justin and Caleb doing? Is it an interception? Is that
right?
I don't think fans are going to care as much. They're going to start.
I think there's going to be a fever pitch because there's going to be so many expectations this year. The only way I can see it being like wondering what players are doing what is if they do get like a Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
If I'm just saying it's. And I'll be real, when I was doing my recaps last year, y'all don't know because all of y'all ain't there, but those who do come to practice, they've never done it after like a week and a half. Like, they're doing the same training methods. They did good in 7-7 today.
Right. You also have to realize the purpose of training camp. It's not being there so the players can get, you know, we need to really get everything nailed down. We need to make sure our offense is coming out the bait and being great.
And I think that last training camp should prove this season, last training camp has proven people, training camp is not the end all be all. And I tell you this, after leaving training camp, I thought this offense was going to be sorry to at least week 10. And I told everybody, pump the brakes. I thought this offensive line, I was not confident at all. Drew Dahlman was having busted snaps every other day. Yeah. So don't take too much from it. I think it was for everybody to learn.
And then for those who don't know, training camp is to get your physical condition up because you need to get back into the habit of like, all right, we'll get on and off the field. Get your timing up because, okay, we're running two-minute drills. This is what you need to do. That ball gets out there, you need to run down. You need to be prepared to run. Then we're going to start installing offensive systems. Being familiar with the way the game goes and how it changes depending on the scenario that they're in. They just evaluate the talent that they have.
You know? I do believe Caleb is officially in. He's only having two drives all preseason category. Yeah. So, but I know Joe got to eat. I got to record something else for my YouTube page. So I will holler at y'all. We going to holler at y'all when we holler at y'all, man. So we up out of here.
This is Bobby Yeagum, Curtis Dennis. Know that we can roll you way back from the beginning. A trusted source for the news. It's every night for Hallis, what it is, what it do. Since Bobby Yeagum, Curtis Dennis. Know that we've been loyal even when we wasn't winning. A trusted source for the news. It's every night for Hallis in your ears. You.
Awesome. The Bears.